Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
A South African insurer has warned that you may have forgotten how to drive. Year on year, claims trends from auto and general insurance finds that even though DUI-related claims have declined, there have been an increase in accidents caused by negligent driving, smaller accidents and accidents with only one vehicle involved. That's the most embarrassing kind. It really is. Dr. Michael Huth, specialist neurologist from the Neurological Association of South Africa, said that experienced drivers can certainly suffer from skills fade. Joining us on the line is Dr. Michael Huth, specialist neurologist from the Neurological Association of South Africa. Very, very good morning, and thanks for taking the time to speak to us. How are you?
Good morning, Howard, and good morning to the listeners.
So it's awesome to have you.
Thank you.
Good. Is it really possible? I mean, or maybe we were just very bad drivers in the first place.
That's also true. I think the data is quite interesting. The increase is proportional to a select type of accident which involves small things like bumper bashing and single vehicle accidents, i.e. people making driving mistakes, parking mistakes, driving into things. And this points to the fact that it's lack of driving skill as opposed to all the other problems, the usual problems on South African roads, that is causing the increase in amount of claims. This is offset, obviously, by the reduction in the driving under the influence alcohol-related claims, which is much less due to the fact that the sales of alcohol have been less over lockdown and there have been less social gatherings. So really what it does show is that there's a proportion of people who are driving who, due to lockdown and due to less time on the road, have diminished skills, and they have what's called a skills fade, which we do see in various different types of behaviors and complex tasks such as driving. I think it's important to note that not everyone is vulnerable, but there are certain types of drivers that are more susceptible to this, and that would be drivers.
Don't say women.
I have to keep things very PC.
But not on the show.
On this show.
No, yes, exactly. You're in no danger. You don't need to worry. Yeah.
But to say that, I think that the real risk categories are people that are new drivers. So if you just got your license before lockdown,
so it's not as well established.
A couple of months off.
Mm.
And if you are have a physical or neurological impairment, if you're not a very frequent driver, so people that were driving, say, for example, once or twice a week prior to lockdown and then have not been driving for many months, and people that are quite nervous drivers, who themselves are not confident to start with and then have a big setback in their confidence after a few months not driving.
What's interesting is I remember reading, I think it was in The Power of Habit, Charles Duhigg's book, where he uses driving as one of the examples of how much effort and brain power almost it takes to say, right, I'm now turn on the car, push my foot in, put it in reverse, you know, do this, look in my, and as we practice and practice and practice and do this more and more often, we don't even think consciously about what we are doing. We just, without even thinking, we're turning it on, pushing on, you know, putting in the clutch, doing what we do as a form of habit. Does that impact on how people drive after a long period of not driving?
That's an excellent point, Howard. So most of us are at the point where we've been driving for many years and we've forgotten what it was like to learn how to drive.
Right.
But for example, you, Howard, you've got older children who you've obviously helped them to teach them to drive, etc. And that first day they get in the car and it's like, you know, they're driving, they're trying to learn to drive a manual and it's like, it's almost impossible. They think they're never going to do it. How am I going to get this clutch balanced with the accelerator and then turning the gear at the same time, looking up which car's coming and remembering the rules of the road and then keeping to the, you know, the right speed and, you know, et cetera, and my parent is shouting at me at the same time. So it starts out as a very, very complicated task. 20 years later, fast forward 20 years later, and you've had a bad day at work, and you're on automatic pilot, and suddenly you find yourself home, and you can't even 100%. Remember
you don't know how
you drove home.
Absolutely.
The 20 kilometers through all the traffic lights, stop streets. You weren't 100%. Even looking at cars, and how did you make it? Mm-hmm. So it's an amazing, amazing, miraculous, you know, feature of the brain that it's able to take a complicated task such as driving, which involves a lot of motor output, sensory input, control, monitoring, and make it very automatic. And that's because of the way the brain is sort of designed. In fact, that it has a type of procedural memory, which is like a muscle memory. Like think of learning to do, for example, a tennis serve. Mm. So once you've learned it, it's in that system, and it's always can be reproduced, and it's almost automatic. That's kept in a lot in a sort of primitive area of the brain, much more primitive area of the brain. And then there's more sophisticated, higher functioning areas of the brain involved in what we call working memory, which is involved in driving. And that's a combination of short-term memory, long-term memory, receiving all the sensory input around you through your five senses, and then putting out, you know, your motor output into your gears and your steering wheel and everything. And then obviously feedback, monitoring how that motor output is and then the results of that. So the procedural memory actually is a very, very basic part of any animal's brain. It's very resistant to fading with age. It doesn't go quickly or early in dementias. The working memory is a very sophisticated part of the mammalian brain of sophisticated animals such as humans, and that does fade with age easily and goes also quickly and early in dementias.
There's been a lot of talk around cognitive or neurological impact of COVID-19. Are you seeing that? I mean, I know we're talking about driving, but it all kind of links together. Are you seeing an impact?
It's a huge impact, Howard. It's worldwide. It's a very serious phenomenon. And I think it's people must be aware and cognizant of when they look at the statistics that we've been seeing all over social media, etc., and they see that, you know, there's whatever 90%, 95% of survival and recovery rate, should they say, in the South African system, they call it recovery rate. The recovery rate is a statistic they're using of patients with COVID that have survived, that are living, but they don't speak about the patients that have the ongoing long COVID symptoms and the neuropsychiatric manifestations and some respiratory manifestations that are affecting even young people for many, many months after COVID. I mean, just to give a few ideas of what we've been seeing. So from the neurological side, we see headaches. We see new onset de novo headaches in patients that were previously headache naive. We see worsening of previous headache disorders such as migraines, tension type headache. We're seeing problems with brain fog and cognitive issues. We're seeing patients that resemble almost like a post-concussion syndrome, where they have lightheadedness, inability to concentrate, irritability, etc., for many, many months, inability to focus, and this affects them quite a lot in the workplace. And we're seeing a lot of new onset anxiety without the psychosocial stresses needed to be anxious. So patients who weren't anxious prior to having COVID, who have not even had severe COVID, no admission, etc., they go through illness and they develop either panic disorder or generalized anxiety disorder, which wasn't there before and needs treatment. So there's lots of, I mean, that's just the neuropsych stuff. Then we're seeing a lot of patients with effort intolerance, can't exercise for many months afterwards. So there's
because I wonder, maybe, I don't think I've had COVID, but maybe one, now that you mention that as a symptom.
Yeah, so there's a lot of and chronic fatigue, obviously chronic fatigue syndrome. There's a lot of disability and mobility that is in the patients that recover. So this recovery rate, as they call it, are people that are surviving, but There's a lot of impact on patients after COVID.
Very concerning, and I do think it's something that we should be looking out for and speaking more about, because it definitely does seem to be a very real thing.
It's there. I think it's going to be one of the big challenges for the next few years in medicine, is dealing with these patients. You know.
But just a question, can you separate the anxiety, maybe the post-traumatic? I know Dr. Anton Marburg's referred to post-traumatic stress that a lot of patients suffer from afterwards as well. It's got to be quite difficult to separate all of these items.
So I think there's definitely the subset of patients, Howard, that have been through that hospital experience where they've been on high flow oxygen. They may have been awake and ventilated. They've been, you know, obviously through a life-threatening situation and a massive trauma, and that whole type of traumatic hospital experience, who develop an expected anxiety disorder following that.
Right.
But we've been seeing patients that have been at home with mild flu-like illnesses from COVID, nothing to stress them out, no fear of death, no fear of disease, of severe disease, no psychosocial stressor that would account for the anxiety, and then developing this anxiety, this free-floating anxiety out of nowhere, sometimes even panic attacks.
Amazing.
In patients that were previously not anxious, well-adjusted, non-anxious people. So this is a very tricky, strange, funny illness, and it has done, you know, a lot of unexpected things that we've seen it do over the last year or two. And then not to forget that sometimes you have non-respiratory presentations of COVID. So we've seen a lot of patients who just present with a simple headache, and that's the way they manifest their COVID.
Right. Unfortunately, that is where we have to leave it. Dr. Michael Huth, specialist neurologist from the Neurological Association of South Africa, speaking to us this morning. Thank you for doing that.